36, recorded 28th of July, 2008. My name is Cameron Riley. You're on G'day World on the Podcast Network. Just in case this is your first time listening and you're thinking, who is this man and where does he come from? My guest today, I'm sitting in Melbourne, taking a trip down to Melbourne for a few days. I'm sitting in the living room of my good mate, Steve Sammartino, CEO and founder of Rentoid.com. Welcome back to the show, Steve.
Thank you, Cameron.
I just shook his hand. That's like, this is like theatre of the mind. Imagine me shaking somebody's hand. It's very scruffy, hasn't had a shave, but picked me up from the airport. So I bought him lunch.
I don't need to tell people I haven't had a shave, that's a secret.
Now, this is Steve was on the show, 6 months ago, maybe, talking about Rentoid, which, by the way, is kicking ass. Got some major television coverage in Australia. Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Talking to the microphone.
We had two nice pieces of PR on national television on two separate channels and multiple radio interviews, which it's amazing what old world media can do occasionally. Still got some kick.
Crashed your servers.
Crashed the servers, which I think that's the baptism of fire we all need to have get a website up and running.
Wait till you get hacked, man.
Yeah.
You're not running an online startup until you've been hacked.
Yeah, we haven't had that yet. Please, hackers, let me go.
But when Steve was on the show last time, I promised that I'd get him back on to talk. We were doing it in my living room in Yarraville, I think, last time. Mm-hmm. We talked about how we'd get him back on to talk about his investment philosophy. And we never got around to doing that. And I had somebody send an email the other day saying, hey, when are you going to get that Sammartino guy back on? And so now we're doing it. Now, Steve has done a great job with this. This isn't just theory. Steve's one of the guys that's taken all the theory and actually put it into practice. Now, I'm going to give you my summary of my understanding of his story, and then he'll obviously correct me if I screw it up. But Steve worked in corporate jobs for
12 years.
12 years, is that all?
Yep, 12 years.
How old are you?
I'm 35.
Shit, you're only 35. For 12 years, he worked in corporate white-collar jobs, marketing for big evil consumer foods companies here in Australia. And during that time, he followed all of the basic principles of building an investment portfolio on his income, to the point where he has built up a big enough investment portfolio that a couple of years ago, he was able to walk away from his corporate job and has basically lived on the dividends from this investment portfolio.
Correct.
At the age of 30, well, you were 33?
I was 33 when that happened.
33, he basically was able to afford to not have to work anymore because of the investment portfolio that he put together. Now, this makes me feel incredibly stupid. And, you know, I've been reading these same books and hearing the same basic philosophy since I was 18. But just haven't followed through on it like Steve has. And it's one of the things I respect most about Steve is that he takes the basics and actually fucking does them. The rest of us go, well, that'd be good, but I need to buy a plasma TV instead. So Steve is going to come and talk to us about how he did it and what you can do if you want to build up an investment portfolio over the next decade that can mean you are financially independent?
Yep. If you do it for sort of 10 years consistently.
Talking to the microphone, boy.
If you can do it for 10 years consistently and obey the rules of how it works, and these rules are not new, they've been around for thousands of years, you can choose not to get out of bed, which I did for kind of 3 months when I first left the corporate scene. I did choose to kind of sleep in a lot and read books and enjoy that. So.
Now, but before you can hear the rest of this episode, you just need to pay $1,000 into my bank account and then you'll get the secrets of becoming rich.
Yeah.
Because that's the way it normally works, right? If you want to go to a course or hear about this stuff, you need to pay a shitload of money to hear it. But you're going to give it to us for free.
Yeah, I'm going to give it to everyone for free for one reason, is that anyone who needs to sell their ideas, you shouldn't believe them, is the first thing. Someone who's prepared to give you investing advice for free, they're the people you ought to listen to, is one of the things that I found. And the other really cool thing is that everything we're going to teach you today or go through today, you can achieve for zero cost by just going and getting a library card, because there'll only be two book recommendations at the end of this.
Two book recommendations.
And I've read them all.
And how many movies? Any movies?
None, really. No movies. No. Just two book recommendations. And one of the books was written in like 1936 or something.
I know the book.
You know the book. Yeah. And the reality is, if you go and get a library card, which won't cost you anything, and read these two books and have discipline, then this is all very easy and very doable.
So when you and I over lunch that I paid for, I'd just like to point out yet again, he's the rich one, but I paid for lunch. I offered to do, I'm teasing. Because he picked me up from the airport, for another reason. The first thing I said we should talk about is why. Now, I've already sort of hinted at that. At the age of 33, you were able to replace your corporate income to the point where you could afford to, you know, live comfortably.
A reasonable life. I'm not flying around in a private jet first thing. A reasonable life. And I think that's one of the differences, is that we confuse what we want with what we need.
Yep.
And a certain part of the process is working out what your true needs are and knowing when to pull out and not getting too greedy and not chasing more money for more investing and just that cycle of stupidity.
And I guess in theory now you're going to be able to spend the rest of your life living off of your passive income.
Yeah, I am. And it actually is growing as I do it. And I'm still investing passively from my passive income into the portfolio.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, that's impressive. So in the 2 years you haven't had a corporate job,
no,
your investment, the size of your portfolio has actually continued to grow, even though you've been, you know.
Well, and this is an interesting point. The capital worth of my portfolio has declined, right? But my yield has gone up.
Okay, now you're going to explain it to us because this confused me over lunch. All right, so I wanted to start by talking about the why. So, you know, one of the reasons obviously is so, and people don't need to replace their jobs. They don't have to leave their jobs if they like their jobs. But just to have, you know, $5,000 a month coming in passive income would give us all a level of choices that we don't have today.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it's about. It's about choice. What it does is it, having an investment portfolio and building one, it invents choice. A lot of us don't have choice, and that's the actual really powerful thing, is that if we create choice for ourselves, then we can invest our most valuable asset, which is time, in the way that we choose.
Sorry, folks, I just stopped the chat there because I realised that my MacBook was using the internal microphone and not the snowball. So now we're on the snowball. Hopefully it sounds a little bit better. So you were talking about investing. It gives you choice about how you spend your time.
Yeah. Like, for example, my father's a farmer, and he's at the point where he doesn't need to work. He's semi-retired, but he continues to do what he's always done because he loves it. So what it's about is freeing yourself time, inventing time, and putting yourself in a position where you can choose to fill your days how you please.
Now, what I want to first start off with, mate, is how did you get started on this track? Was it something your parents passed on to you, or you just read a book about it? You had a mentor? How did you start off? At what age and how did you go? How did you get into it?
Self-discovery. It was when I finished university. I was about 21, and I really just I couldn't cope with having to go somewhere between like 8 in the morning and 6 at night. I just couldn't cope, and I couldn't believe that people did this their entire life, where they sat in offices and did inane stuff and filled out forecasts and spreadsheets on stuff that didn't matter. And I thought, is this what it is? Because I came from university having 3 months off, going surfing, you know, you have half weeks that are kind of half fielded, and I thought, no, I can't do this. I have to do something to get out of this. But like everyone, I like to have nice shirts and different things and enjoy life. So I thought there's got to be another answer. And that's when I became interested in making money. It was kind of a bit of a greed thing, but it was always related to the fact that there's got to be a better way than driving in a metal box to sit in a wooden office and look at a, you know, another box, a screen, a computer and do stuff, and then drive home in a box and then just fall asleep, watch the box. And I just thought something's all terribly wrong. So I just wanted to find out more about it.
So you went off on your own path of self-discovery?
Went on my own path and started in the investment section of a bookstore.
Okay. So let's start off with the definition of investing. I know you've got lots of thoughts around this. This is, by the way, I'm entitling this episode the Sammartino Method.
And I love that.
I'm going to copyright that and lease that name back to Steve for when he starts doing seminars and charges you money.
Yes.
And says, oh, don't forget what I said about, forget what I said on that podcast about anyone else to sell you their ideas isn't worth it. Change my mind.
No, I haven't. I'll do them for free.
Well, how am I going to make money out of that?
Okay. Well, you can be my agent.
Okay. So let's talk about investing. What is investing?
Okay. In my view, the Sammartino Method says that investing is the allocation of resources for predictable financial gains.
Okay. predictable financial predictable gains.
That's a really important word.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk about what that means. So this is important. Why? So you can make a difference between investing and taking a punt?
Yeah. A lot of people believe they're investing when what they're actually doing is gambling. And the easiest way to define the difference between investing and gambling is the time frame.
Right.
Okay. And I'll give you a really simple example. You go down to the Crown Casino or whichever city you live in and place some money on the table or on the craps table and throw some dice. It takes about a second, mm-hmm. okay? That's a really short time frame. You go down to the horses, it takes 5 or 10 minutes for the race to get run. That's a short time frame. The longer the time frame goes in your investment, the more likely that it's not gambling. That's an easy way to look at it. If you are buying a stock and you're intending to flip it that day or that week or even that month or that year, or a house, you buy something and you want to flip it a year later and renovate it. None of that is investing. A lot of that is gambling.
Where's the magic line where it becomes investing?
I think really it's got to be 5 years plus before it's investing. You've got to be able to ride out an economic cycle. Mm-hmm. Most economic cycles in recent years, the last kind of 30 years, haven't gone for much longer than 5 or 7 years.
Right.
But in real terms, economic cycles can go for as long as 20 or 30 years. It took kind of 20 years in the post-depression for things to sort them out. But the cycles tend to be a lot shorter now than they were historically because the speed of information and the way that we can access information around the world.
Now, I just sold some Microsoft stock that I had owned for 10 years. There was a long time frame and it went nowhere. In fact, I think it went backwards. Does that just mean I'm a bad investor? That was a bad investment?
Well, it depends how you were given the shares. If you were given them as part of employment or something, then that can be a good thing.
No, I invested 10% of my income into buying them while I worked at Microsoft.
Yeah, if there's some kind of, and I did the same when I was at Gillette, where I got, you know, for every 2 shares I bought, I got given one free,
mm-hmm.
Which was a good system because it means you're 30% up the day you buy the share,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty good. Mm. And most employee share schemes are pretty good. But if you get to a point where you've got a large portion of your assets allocated to one resource that you don't control, then that's a bad investment, okay?
Right.
So a lot of people might be very wealthy and they own a business and they have shares in that business. It may even be a publicly traded company, but because they have an influence on its control, it's okay to have a large proportion of your investment allocated to that.
Right.
But if you don't control the investment, then you need to hold as many of investment vehicles as possible.
Okay. Let's talk about the types of investments that there are.
Okay, there's really only three places you can ever have money, right? And there is no other place than having your money either in cash, equity, or real estate. There's no other possible place to have money allocated. And if we talk about cash...
That includes if you own a business, that's your equity in that business, right?
Equity includes a business you own or an investment stake that you have in a public or private vehicle.
What about art?
Art is, that's equity. You own equity in the art. You're the 100% owner or a percentage owner in that equity.
Okay.
But it doesn't usually have a yield. It only has capital growth.
True.
So I would never invest in art because it's highly risky investment.
Okay. What about horses?
Horses, I would never invest in a horse.
What about emus?
I wouldn't invest in an emu.
What about olive groves?
I might invest in olive groves. I would be surprised if I didn't have
some
form of... That's
a business though, because you're effectively taking equity in a business.
That's right. It's just got a long yield, but... I probably have some olive groves right now.
I think art can have a yield if you buy it and then rent it out to a corporation to hang in their office and they pay.
Look, I probably own both olive groves and art and maybe even some horses in my portfolio through virtue of the fact that I do a type of investing where I own everything.
Yes, okay. And this is
we'll talk about that in a sec. But before we do that, I think it's really important I talk about the different types of investment. So cash is a place where you can have money. So there's only three places you can have money. And one is in cash, which is transactional or money you have in the bank or money in your wallet.
Mm-hmm.
The other is equity, which is owning a business or having shares in a company. And the other is real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're the only three places that money can be.
Okay.
All right. And it's less efficient. You've got to have the minimum amount of cash at all times. You really should only have enough cash for transactional purposes.
So
anything that you need in that month.
Right.
And have a little mojo amount put aside so that if everything turns to shit, you can quickly get yourself through the next month or whatever.
What if it's sitting in some sort of a cash management?
Yeah, it's still cash.
It's still cash. Still not good?
Yeah, it's still not good because someone else is using your money for greater capital gain and greater yield.
Okay.
All right. And it's getting eaten into by inflation.
Right.
Okay. So where you should have the majority of your investment stake is either in equity or real estate. And I think for the purposes of what we're talking about here, we should talk about equity because the principles are the same with real estate and equity. They're exactly the same. They're just different vehicles.
Right.
All the principles, none of the principles change between the two.
Okay.
So let's just focus on shares.
Let's talk shares.
And then we can make it easy and maybe another day we can talk about how real estate works in much the same way.
Okay.
All right.
So with the share market, I've bought shares and I bought a lot of dot-com shares in the late 90s that all don't exist anymore.
Mm.
And my Microsoft shares weren't very successful for me. So what's the secret to investing in the share market?
The secret to investing in the share market is, I believe, to be indexing. There is really no other way, unless you're Warren Buffett, to make good solid returns in the share market.
What does indexing mean?
Yeah. Indexing is a really interesting thing that a lot of people don't even know is possible. Quite often when you watch the news, you'll see something like the All Ordinaries Index or the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones went up by this amount or that amount. And basically what that is just a measure, an agglomeration of shares that they pull together. So the S&P 500 is an index where it takes the 500 biggest stocks that are in America on the American Stock Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the All Ordinaries in Australia is everything excluding mining stocks. Okay.
Okay.
So index investing is when you take an index such as those that I've just described and invest in that in totality.
How do you do that?
Yeah. Now, you can't do it yourself unless you've got a lot of money.
Right.
But there are vehicles that do it. And the number one company that does it is Vanguard. Okay. And they invented this whole meme in the mid-70s. There was a book that was written about it, which we'll go through later. But it is basically, there are companies that specialize in buying the entire index and you can buy a portion of that. And the way an index works is, for example, if we had the top 500 stocks, they will buy those stocks allocated in exact proportion of what they represent at the size of the market. So if Microsoft is 1.3% of the market in the US, 1.3% of your stock portfolio will be Microsoft. If GM is 0.875% of the market of the top 5%, 0.875% of your stock portfolio will be allocated to these stocks. And what they do is they buy the top 500 stocks, and every 3 months or so, they'll reallocate the resources based on where they moved up or down. So if a stock starts declining and going down and falls out of the 500, they'll sell it off. And if a stock comes in, they automatically buy in. Now, what that does is it means two things. It means we get rid of the losers before we have to worry about it, and we never miss a winner.
Right.
Okay. And what it also does is it gives you diversification across the entire economic system of the world. Okay. So if anything really starts to happen that's important, you've automatically got it. And if anything really starts to become yesterday's hero, it falls out automatically. It does one other really important thing in that you're not paying some fool on Wall Street $500,000 or $5 million to pick stocks for you. And the reason that that's important is that in the history of man and in the history of stock markets, only two people, I think, and there might be a handful, but there's two that I know of, have beaten the share market consistently, okay? No one can beat the share market. They just can't do it. There's a whole lot of reasons why that we won't have time to go through today, but no one in the history of the share market has ever beaten share market returns, the average share market return. So by knowing that, what you've got to do is buy the share market.
Okay, so you give. Let's say you have $1,000 and you buy an index fund.
Is it an index fund? Yeah, an index fund.
You spend $1,000 a month, and then they allocate your $1,000 across the top stocks.
Yep, the top 300 or so. So it's quite diversified. It's a large proportion of stocks,
right,
which normally the top 300 or 500 stocks would cover something like 90% of the share market.
Right. Okay. And then you wait for those shares to go up?
Yeah. Well, You do wait for the shares to go up, but that's not why you're doing it, okay? Because you should never really look at the price of a share or what it's valued at, because that's based on popularity. Because the share market prices in the short term are a popularity contest, okay?
But isn't that how people make money out of shares? They buy a share and wait for it to go up. You buy Google and wait for it to go up.
That's how gamblers make money.
Right.
Investors don't make money that way.
Right.
Like, for example, I'd never buy Google shares right now. They're at a 34 times price earnings ratio. That means I've got to wait 34 years before I would get my original investment back before I even got a return.
Okay, you want to break that down?
Okay, so a price earnings ratio is the earnings that a company generates as a proportion, a ratio to its valuation.
Right.
So if I pay $1, or if I pay $34 for Google shares, I'm getting $1 back.
Right.
Okay? So it'll take me 34 years before I get my original investment back.
Right.
Based on today's prices.
Okay. And that's high because there's an assumption that they're going to make a lot more money?
Yeah, that's high because what people have done is they've factored in growth.
Right.
Okay? But the reality is we don't know.
Yep.
And that's not investing. That's gambling. As soon as you're buying something because you think it's going to grow and the market assumes that, that's where you become a gambler and you're not an investor. So investors buy on yield.
So explain that to us. What is yield and how does that work?
Yield is the return you get as a profit or a dividend as a percentage in price that you paid for a certain stock or equity. Okay.
So if I pay a dollar for a share in company X, they will pay me
20 cents or 10 cents.
20 cents a year out of their profits.
Correct.
Right.
Which may be all of the profit or a percentage of the profit. So that with your yield, if you're getting 20 cents on a dollar investment, would be a 20% yield.
So when you buy these index funds, you get a dividend from all of the companies in that index that you buy each year?
Well, it depends on the company. Some don't pay dividends. Some reinvest all of their dividends.
Right.
And some will pay high dividends. So it varies.
Yep.
But on average, I've averaged about 5% per annum. And most of that is franked in that the tax is already paid by the corporation.
So you don't pay capital gains tax on that?
You'd only pay tax on the dividends if your income was higher than a threshold amount that the companies pay. And company tax is about 30%.
So when you buy an index fund, does the company that runs the index fund just pay you a single check once a year or once a month?
You can choose to take the dividends or reinvest them.
I'll reinvest it back in.
And I reinvest it back in.
But what are you living on then?
I allocate a certain proportion of cash out of that once a year and just live on that.
Once a year?
Yeah.
So you just put a bunch of money
in the bank account. I just put an X amount in the bank account and just live on that. Draw down on it.
Right.
And that's also in a high interest account where I get 8% as well. And I also put in that allocation, the amount I'm going to reinvest in the account as well.
Okay.
So it's kind of circular. But the interesting thing on the index is that the fees are very, very low. And that's one of the things that gives it a massive advantage. If you buy a normal stock or a normal fund, you might be paying anywhere between 2 and 4% to the people who are choosing the stocks. And they don't even beat the share market on average. They don't even beat the index returns.
Right.
They're usually underneath it.
Bet you they're making good money, though.
They're making great money. They're making millions of dollars. Let me just...
That's your phone.
I'm going to turn that off. Sorry about that.
Let the record show that the Sammartino method had to turn his phone off. So you're paying low fees on these indices?
Yeah, almost. Well, it's less than 1% per annum is what you'd pay with a typical index.
And what do you do when the share market crashes?
Yeah, I actually totally ignore it. I don't care what happens to the share market today, tomorrow, this week or next year. I absolutely irrelevant because all the share market's movements in a particular day is just based on expectations and what people think is happening. Very little of it is based on reality. It's based on expectations, so it's not real. So that's people gambling in the short term on whether or not they think the market's going to go up and down. The truth is, I don't know whether the market's going to go up or down today, tomorrow, this week, this year, or next year. What I do know is that anywhere between 5, 10, and 20 years, it's definitely going up.
So over a long period of time...
Over a long period of time...
It always goes up.
I am certain that it goes up. In fact, it always goes up and it always has. The only buyer beware with that is that if the whole economic system that we have come to rely upon, excess food and the agrarian culture we have where we've got, food and shelter provided, if that fell over...
When I usher through the communist revolution...
That's right. When you usher that through...
Global communism...
Yes.
You're fucked.
Yeah, and so is everyone listening to that. But so long as the economic systems that we know about remain,
that's my phone.
Let it be known that Cameron Riley's phone also. So long as the economic system remains intact, over the long run, prices always go up. The share market will always go up because.
So you call this dollar cost averaging. What does that mean?
Yeah, dollar cost averaging is a really important thing. What you need to do is you need to put in the same amount or an increasing amount at a specific time, whether it's weekly or monthly, all the time, and set and forget. Ignore what's happening in the share market. Never listen to any share market reports or what you see in the paper about which stocks went up and which ones went down because it's irrelevant. What matters...
So good times, bad times, you just keep investing and it averages out over...
And the interesting thing is too, people actually react in the opposite way that they should, right? So when the share market starts to crash, guess what everyone does?
They sell.
What should they be doing? They should be buying.
Because it's cheap.
Yeah, because when hamburgers and chips and Coca-Cola get cheaper in the supermarket, guess what everyone does? They buy more. So why don't they do that on the share market?
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Why do they do it?
Because they're stupid. Because they listen to the crap they hear on Channel 9 and Channel 7.
That's basically the guiding philosophy of this show. People are stupid.
He's rubbing off on me. I've only been with him like 2 hours today, and already he's turning me into a...
People are stupid.
No, because we've been trained. We've been trained that investing is risky.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was to get on a little separate thing here, I'd say that the government actually doesn't want you to know about investing. What they want is people to work in jobs where they buy stuff, consume stuff, and pay taxes and stay in the cycle for 50 years.
Yep. Keep producing.
You keep producing, sit in a chair, and then die 2 years after you retire.
So you should just... set a certain amount of money.
If you set a dollar cost averaging, one really powerful, important thing starts to happen. So if I put, say, $1,000 aside a month and invest in this index every month, regardless of what happens to the share market, this beautiful thing happens. When the share market drops in value, if I'm still putting in the $1,000, I'm actually buying more shares cheaper. Mm-hmm. So when the market goes down, I'm buying... the shares cheaper, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just because I'm still putting in the $1,000. Mm-hmm. If the market's going up and I'm still putting in the $1,000, I'm actually allocating less of my money to the shares when they're expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So just by putting in the same amount every month, I'm buying more shares when they're cheaper and less shares when they're expensive. And what that does is that increases your returns anywhere between 2 and 3% over the long term. A lot of people don't know that. And that's the really powerful thing, dollar cost averaging and consistent investment set and forget.
So when's the best time to start something like this? Should you start at a particular cycle?
Yeah, the best time to start this is right now. And the reason that the best time to start investing...
Wait till they finish listening to the podcast first.
After the podcast is the best time to start.
And after you put the $1,000 for listening to the podcast in my bank account.
Correct.
CameronRiley@gmail.com. That's my PayPal. Just send it through to me.
And the best time is now. And that's because the most powerful element in investing is time. So
that sounds like a catchphrase. Have you trademarked that?
No, I haven't actually.
You should, man. With the San Martino method. You can't do that one.
Yeah, you own the San Martino method. But that's because the sooner you start, the longer your returns will have time to germinate. Because nature and business are very closely aligned, right? It's pretty much like if you plant a fruit tree, right? The longer it goes, the bigger the yield. Someone's probably got an old lemon tree in their backyard. It's got so many lemons, they have to give them away. Nature and business... absolutely, fundamentally, and completely aligned. Because everything we've ever done in business, it started with agriculture. We worked out that there was seed and we planted seeds and the seeds grew and we managed our investments. It's the exact same thing with shares and companies and real estate. It's all about, you know, allowing things to have the time to return something and not chopping it up and selling the wood and the bits and pieces. Let the tree grow. Eventually you'll have so many lemons you have to give it away because you can't. There's only so much limoncello you can make, even when you're using the Sammartino method of limoncello making.
I bought some great limoncello in Corsica a couple of weeks ago. You just reminded me. I want to go back.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me ask you a thing about setting aside money. I mean, most of us live on everything that we've got.
Mm.
I mean, most people I know sort of have credit card debt. We have record levels of credit card debt in this country. Obviously, people are not only spending everything that they make every month, they're spending more than they make and they've got credit card debt. Part of this process, obviously, is learning to live on a budget and make sure that there's money left over to invest. Yeah. Is that part of the discipline?
That's probably the first bit. Actually, the truth is that you need to be able to live within your means before any of this is possible. Okay, I'm not gonna assume that there's any tricks or anything that you can't do here. If you cannot spend less than you earn, you'll never ever be wealthy. Okay, I'm gonna tell you that here and now. If you've got credit card debt or you've got non-productive debt, exclude your house mortgage because that's an asset which grows and it's a forced savings plan and that's good. But if you cannot live on less than you earn, you'll never ever be wealthy. You'll always be someone else's slave and you'll always be working for them. Mm-hmm. That's a fact. It takes discipline. You need to be able to save before you can do anything. If you can't save money, forget it. You'll never ever be successful or wealthy in the modern world because money is how everything, you know, money buys time in this world. Unfortunately, that's our currency and that's how things work. So you need to be disciplined enough to...
not buy the iPhone.
To not buy the
not
iPhone.
Not get the plasma TV.
Yeah, well, just to live within your means. I mean, a lot of the things we think we need, we actually don't. Mm-hmm. And we buy things as a replacement for the time that we lack to kind of make ourselves feel good because we work in a job we hate for 12 hours a day and we do all of these things. So on the weekend, to make ourselves feel good about maybe the lack of happiness we have in our particular job. We go and buy stuff to make us feel good until we get back to work on Monday. If you can get off that train and start just living within your means, then you start to get into a good place. So, and another thing that in order to allow that to happen is to write down what your expenses are. It'd be the first part. If you're out of control with your spending, this is what I recommend you do. You get a little tiny notepad that fits in your back pocket. Every time you spend something, just write it down on what it was, okay? That's all you do. It'll take you about 5 seconds. Do it for a month, right? Every time you use your credit card, your FPOS card, or cash out of your wallet, write it down on what it was. At the end of the month, add them all up, put them in a little spreadsheet or even just a piece of paper and see what you spent the stuff on, and you will be flummoxed and surprised at how much money you wasted on crap you really didn't need. Do that for a month and you'll see where your money's going. It only takes a month.
I did that once like 10 years ago and saw I was spending like $400 a month on lattes.
That's me too. That's where most of my money goes.
Like $3 a latte, or four times a day adds up. I bought one at Brisbane Airport this morning on the way down, $5 for a latte at Brisbane Airport.
Crazy. It's crazy. And it's in Brisbane too, so it probably wasn't such a great coffee.
It was awful. Yeah, it was terrible.
So I actually had a friend who struggled with some money. I won't mention his name, but he...
John.
Yeah, it was John.
His name was
John Puglia.
Loser.
That's not his name. And I asked him to do this because he came to me crying for help one day. And I said, do you want to do it? And he said, yeah. I said, okay, you're going to do what I say? And he said, yeah, I'm going to do what I say. I said, here's what to do, the first step. Go and write down everything you spend. And he couldn't do that. And I've asked him so many times and he's never done that. And
it's
I think
hard.
He's too scared to do it and see what he's doing. So if that's the first step, write down what you're spending your money on and then you'll see where you're wasting
it. It's like living on a diet. I mean, it's easy for the first 2 days and then you get distracted. And then you skip a day and you think, oh, shit, I better...
Discipline's the key. You need to be disciplined and know where your money's going. And then once you know where it's going, you can work out what to cut out, and then you might be able to allocate $100 a week, which in today's world, hey, even if you're on a meager income, $100 a week is not much to put aside.
And it's part of the secret to actually just start. Doesn't matter how much, just to start.
That's right. It's just even if you're putting away $50 a month into an investment program, because you start to learn and you get excited and you see the returns after a while, and eventually you just surprise yourself at what happens in the capital growth of what you can get. I did a little example before, just on a little spreadsheet I had here. If you invested $1,000 a month, which is kind of $200 a week, I think, around about, for 20 years, you'd have over $1 million. Now, it sounds like a long time, 20 years, but, you know, I'm 35. If I started doing that when I was 18, 3 years from now, I'd have
$1 million. Used to be a lot of money.
Yeah. No, but $1 million is still a lot of money. See, a lot of people say to me, oh, if I won the lotto, I'd still work because I'd go and buy a house and a boat. You know, let's say they won $3 million. I'd go and buy a house and a boat and I'd get a holiday house and I'd go around the world trip and, you know, I'd only have a few hundred thousand left it'd be cool. I say, no, I would not quit. I'd quit on $1 million. They say, how could you live on $1 million? By the time you buy this, I say, no. I invested at 10% per annum, make $100,000. That's $2,000 a week without getting out of bed. Now tell me, if you're living on more than $2,000 a week now, I bet most people are. So people don't understand that what you've got to do is get yield producing investments. And that's why I keep talking about the price of an investment is only relevant when you buy it. While you're holding it doesn't matter. It's the yield that matters. Okay?
If I won $1 million in the lotto, I'd spend half of it on cocaine and hookers.
Yeah.
And I'd just waste the rest.
Yeah, that's the same as the Georgie Best model. They said to him, what happened to all of your money? He said
the original Beatles drummer.
No, Georgie Best.
Georgie Best
is the Manchester United soccer player who died with the liver. He had like 3 liver transplants and he eventually got him last year. And they said, what happened to all your money? He said, I spent most of it on fast cars, women and wine, and the rest I just squandered.
It's always been my favourite line.
Yeah.
Now let's get back to the size of the investment file, because the point here is that it's generating a passive income for you that just, you know, you can live on.
Yeah, I can live on. So the way to work out how much you need is to work out how much money you want to have in your pocket at the end of every week to live on. Okay? Right. Annualize that. So what is that? Times it by 52. That'll give you an annual amount you need. And then times it by 20.
By 20?
Yeah, that's all you need. So that's a 5% return on investment, which is really easy to get. Like you can get 5% return on investment right now with ING. You can get 8%. That's a no-brainer. That's easy.
Yep.
And you can maybe even get 10% if you're looking for it.
Okay.
A 10% yield, and if you know where to invest. And over time, your yield increases because you get compound growth. And as a share grows in value, you still pay the original price, but the yield will still be in relation to its current value. So I'll give you an example. If I bought a share for $1 mm-hmm. and it was delivering 10% return mm-hmm. on investment, I'd be getting 10 cents a year on that share.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If that share over 10 or 20 years went up to $10 in value,
mm-hmm.
I would be getting, on average, or if I was still getting a 10% return, I'd be getting a dollar as my dividends
mm-hmm.
after the 20 years. That's 100% return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where compounding comes into it. As soon as you trade any of your stocks or anything, you're taking away the most powerful thing in investing, which is compounding.
Because the shares that you're buying then, you're buying at today's rates.
You're buying at today's rates, yesterday's rates. Exactly.
Yeah, right.
And that is the time value of money and the time value of investing.
Right.
So that's why I recommend that you go with indexing.
Yep.
Because you get all of the winners and all of the losers drop out. You usually get pretty high yields with indexing mm. because across that there'll be growth stocks and there'll be stocks that the market hates.
Mm.
So you get a good mix and your yield will usually be about 5% with all the tax paid. Reinvest dividends while you're still working. Allocate as much of your income as you can to it. And hold on to the stocks because as time goes by, your yield increases, but the price you pay for the stocks is yesterday's price.
And is there an index fund that you recommend that people yeah. go and check out?
The index fund that I'd recommend is Vanguard, and they're based in Australia and the US and in most places around the world.
So you just go to their website and
go to vanguard.com or vanguard.com.au if you're in Australia or whatever country you're in. They
you're not on commission to Vanguard?
You know what? It's funny because... I should be because I've put so many people into their fund. It is no joke.
If
anyone out there works
for
Vanguard, I'm telling you now, you should. I've really made a lot of money for you guys. But
Rentoy.com, you know, send Steve a thank you.
Yeah. So
fruit basket.
So Vanguard do indexing very, very well.
Is there a particular product of theirs that you recommend?
Well, I do an allocation where I do half of it in the Australian share market and half of it in international markets.
Okay.
And that's so I get a currency hedge.
Right.
So mm-hmm. by virtue of the fact of being in the US market and the Australian market, if one turns bad or the other one goes really well for 5 or 10 years, because you can have spurts where a certain country or geographic region will outdo the other,
mm-hmm.
You can have a negative impact. So I kind of allocate it 50-50. But my general recommendation would be to stay in the country you're in and totally remove currency risk.
Oh, okay. Really?
That would be my general
recommendation. So for people, should get started just by buying an Australian index.
If you're in Australia or an yep. American one if you're in America.
Yep.
Yeah, so that would be how I'd do it. It takes about $5,000 to get in.
Really?
Yeah,
five
it does.
Grand?
It takes about $5,000.
Why is that?
I think that's because when I was talking, the fund size is very, very big. And in order to split it up amongst the 500 stocks or the 300 stocks,
right.
it takes an amount for them to buy into that.
Yep.
So, that's... would be what I would recommend.
Mm-hmm.
And the fees on that are so low, and I'd recommend that you put in a certain amount every month.
So if people are getting started and they don't have $5,000, they've got to save up till they have $5,000 to get in, then each month, let's say you are putting aside $1,000 a month, what do you do with that $1,000? Can you... you have to save up another $5,000 and buy another?
No. Once you're in,
right.
You can put in a minimum $100 on BPAY.
Oh, okay. So you can just set up a direct monthly.
You can do a direct as soon as you get the day you get paid. And that's another great thing to do.
Mm.
You've got to allocate. Day one when you get paid, it's like it doesn't exist.
Yeah,
just
I used
put
to do that
money,
at Microsoft. That 10% that would go to the employee shares. You don't even know that it's there. You don't even think about it.
You don't. You absolutely don't. And when you get your pay rises too, seriously, just... pretend they're not there
and
put them into the investing. And whenever I had what I call found money, so I just got some money for whatever reason or a little tax bonus or something here and there, I would put all my found money into it. So I did do more than average. And the truth is I put in about, at one point I was putting in 70% of my income. I was earning a lot of money at the time, so I was still probably on that 30% having what an average income would be. So, truth told. But I would put in a large amount of my money into the investment portfolio because I knew what it could do over 10 years.
And you'd minimised your expenses as well?
Yeah. Look, I am the type of person, I've got some pretty simple needs. I like to read the newspaper, have a coffee and go surfing. The waves are free. So I don't live outside of my means, but you'd be surprised how creative you can be in terms of saving money if you're thinking about it.
Mm.
You've got to think. People have got to use their brains and not be so lazy with expenditure and go, it's $2 or it's $10. I don't worry about it. Just enjoy life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I work hard. I enjoy life. All the excuses that everyone says. You got to have your wits about you and think about it. And believe me, everyone will say, 10 years is too long. I can't be bothered with that. But you'll look back in 10 years and go, gee, it wasn't very long. Gee, I wish I did that. I wish I stayed the course. So
if you're
disciplined.
10 years from now, you'll still be a wage slave.
That's right. Yeah, but if you're disciplined, it's there and it's easy.
Books. Yeah. Anything you recommend? You said two books.
There's only two books I'd recommend, and I've read them all, and sometimes I've read them twice. I would recommend A Random Walk Down Wall Street, which talks about indexing.
Who's that by?
That is by Mal Keel.
Mal Keel.
Yeah.
Is that one name or two names?
Yeah, I'll just actually... that's his one name.
I'll put a link to it in the show notes, guys.
Yeah. And the other book I'd recommend is The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham.
Benjamin Graham.
Now, one thing too that you need to know is that Einstein said that the best invention he has ever seen or heard of was compound interest. That was what he said was the most powerful thing he'd ever discovered out of all the things that he'd seen. All right, that's a true story.
Einstein discovered compound interest?
Well, he didn't discover it, but once he found out about it, he said it was the most powerful thing he'd ever found out about.
Right.
Okay. And another thing that Warren Buffett said, this is the world's richest man. He said that if he wasn't him, and he's the only guy who's managed to beat the share market over the long term, if he wasn't him, he would invest in indexes. And that's in every Berkshire Hathaway report you can read over the last 30 years. He says the exact same thing. And Benjamin Graham in The Intelligent Investor says the same thing. Who was Warren Buffett's mentor.
Yeah.
And when you buy The Intelligent Investor or get that, make sure that you get the one with the updated annotations.
Oh, okay.
Because it hasn't been printed since 1971 or 1979 when Benjamin Graham died. But what they've got is they've got some financial advisors to talk about current examples of what they talk about in the original book. So it's got like little addendums at the edge of each chapter, which are really powerful and useful in terms of... And if you could read these two books and take it from me that they're the principles you ought to follow and you do this over the long term, you'll kick ass with investing. And Buffett said too, trying to pick the next Warren Buffett is like trying to find a needle in the haystack. So don't try and do it, just buy the haystack.
Anything else they need to know? You've just told them how to become financially independent in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Can't be that easy, right?
No, it is that. You know, the hardest thing is the discipline to do it.
Yeah.
It's actually so easy, it's a joke. It's a joke. You just got to have the discipline to do it.
If it's so easy, how come everyone doesn't do this and we don't all know about it? Like, we aren't taught this from birth.
I've got a couple of conspiracy theories. I think that the people in power don't want people to know. That's the first thing that I think. The second thing that I think is that people believe that they look for complexity when it's not there in life. In terms of happiness, relationship, everyone is looking for a complex answer, but most of the answers actually really are quite simple, and people don't believe something when it's simple. And then in addition to that, you need the discipline. And
people think it can't be that easy.
Yeah, they think that. It's like anyone says, oh, yeah, it says all that in the books. Yeah, I know all that, but, yeah, it doesn't really work. Well, I say, have you tried it? And people have tried it, and it does work. And the discipline is probably the number one thing. People don't have the discipline to get rid of their credit card debt, and then they don't have the discipline to just set and forget about what the news says on investing and just do it. But if you have the discipline, it's there. So, yeah, I'm flummoxed at why people don't do it. It's so easy. It's just so easy.
Steve Sammartino of the Sammartino Method. Thanks, mate. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited too.
Aside from wanting to do this for myself, I want to teach it to my kids. My kids have just started their own business. We were talking about before the candle making stuff, and it's all about me trying to teach them the basics of how to start and run a business. But this sort of stuff too. If we all started this when we were seven, by the time we were 27,
You'd have. I can tell you $3.2 million if you invested...
depending on how much you put in.
$1,000 a month, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, mate.
No problems.
And plug your blog again. What's your blog?
Yeah, my blog is startupblog.wordpress.com. So startupblog.wordpress.com. And I talk a little bit about investing and starting businesses
and
marketing. Obviously. And yeah, and both of those books are up on rentoid.com too if you need to rent them out. They come from... the Sammartino portfolio of books, so I'm more than happy for you to get on Rentoid and rent one out.
Just on that, and for those of you who haven't heard the Rentoid show, basically it's a site where you can take stuff that you've got lying around that you're not using every day in your house, and you can rent it out to other people in your suburb or in your area, and they pay you a little money. You were telling me you bought a Wii, and how long did it take you to pay for itself?
Yeah, it took 2 months. I bought a Nintendo Wii for $400. I rented it out for $30 a day, and in 2 months my Wii had paid for itself and also bought me a Guitar Hero, which is over on the couch over there, which I can bash out some Guns N' Roses to.
We're going to go play some Guns N' Roses. All right, this is Cameron saying do something with your life, people. I'm out.